Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastoma Vidavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, introduction to the Sandarbhas. Srila Jiva Goswami is revered as the most brilliant and scholarly Vaishnava of his era, quite likely of all time, within the Vaishnava tradition, and to a growing extent in modern academic circles. Jiva Goswami's prolific writings have earned him the reputation as one of greatest religious philosophers in history. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami comments on his celebrated literary achievements as follows. Sri Rupa Goswami's nephew, Srila Jiva Goswami, has compiled so many books on devotional service that there's no counting them. In Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha, footnote 1, the Sat Sandarbhas were originally called the Sri Bhagavat, were called as Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha. Srila Jiva Goswami has written conclusively about the ultimate end of devotional service. The Sandarbha, the Sat Sandarbha, is the essence of all scriptures. In the Sat Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami set forth the truths about transcendental love of Krishna. From this book, one can obtain a conclusive understanding of devotional service and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so that's what you can gain from it, right? Because that will come up when we get to the Mangalacharan, of what can be gained from something, from the study. The most famous and formidable transcendental litter is the book named Gopal Champu. In this book, he has exhibited the ecstatic loving transactions and pastimes of Radha and Krishna. The eternal pastimes of the Lord are established, and the transcendental mellows enjoyed in Vrindavan are completely described. So this Gopal Champu, he wrote that because when you have grammar, then you need examples. So when he wrote the Harinamrita Vyakarana, so it's like 3,000 sutras. So that's the complete grammar. And so that one will actually have experience of seeing the application of all those rules of grammar, then the Gopal Champu, it does that as a side aspect. Right? The main thing is here is he's giving the establishing the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's there, but in doing so, then every rule that's in the Harinamrita Vyakarana is then elaborated. So you just see it. Because otherwise some of these rules are so rare you might come across them once in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's for a scholar who, you know, does quite good reading. Mm-hmm. So then it's a very, so that's what I said, the most famous and formidable, because it has all the grammar in it. And then in doing that, then he gives the Lord's pastimes and, you know, very nice detail and everything. Thus, Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and their nephew Srila Jiva Goswami, as well as practically all of their family members, lived in Vrindavan and published important books on devotional service. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 142-145, Antya Lila 4230-232. On one hand, the Gopal Champu exhibits Srila Jiva Goswami's poetic brilliance and nuanced realization of Bhakti Ras, yet relishing the sweet taste of Krishna Lila is the divine prerogative of a select few. Hence the relatively obscurity of the work. On the other hand, the Sat Sandarbhas are of interest to a broader range of scholars, right? Because the other one you'll appreciate what the pastimes and everything that's being given there, but to appreciate all the grammatical aspects, then you'd actually have to know grammar. You know? So that's why I say that's why it's very narrow who appreciates that, right? But, you know, the pastimes, the knowledge given there, that will always be appreciated. But just to appreciate how it's presented, you know, the poetics of it and all that, that'll be... On the other hand, the satsang dharmas are of interest to a broader range of scholars, for they serve as a systematic theology for the entire Gaudiya Vedanta tradition, because the satsang dharmas consist mainly of Sanskrit prose composed in terse, straightforward style. Right, so it's done in the Nyaya Prashtan. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur offers the following words of praise. Srila Rupa and Sanatan are adorned by the members of the Vishva Vaishnav Raja Sabha and are followers of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Deva, who incarnated to purify the people of Kali Yuga and award them the ultimate goal of life. Under the guidance of Sri Rupa and Sanatana, Srila Jiva Goswami composed his great work, the Sandarbhas. We do not have the ability to describe the glories of this work, which is divided into six parts. All the conclusions and thoughts of the Vaishnava Sampradaya are found in this work. Sajana Toshini 10:12. So it means everything's there. There's no philosophical point that's not addressed. You know, and it's all in its nice thematic study where it goes and how it does. Right. Yes.
So we can say Satsandar, which is the thematic study of Bhagavatam.
Yes. That's why we see it comes along with it. Yeah. That's the idea. That's why it means Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, and then the Sandarbhas are then the thematic study, so that's why those are the parallel courses to the Bhagavatam. Because not seeing them in connection with the Bhagavatam, one wouldn't necessarily gain the proper insight. But just like you see, is that by studying the Vedanta Sutra with the Bhagavatam verses and with the commentaries of the Acharyas, then we start to see it in line with the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, if you studied it on its own, then if one had that scholarly, you know, interest or, you know, taste, then one could go through and probably gain so much and know, you know, a lot about the technical philosophy, but one might not connect it with Bhagavatam, you know, because the actual important understanding of what the Vedanta Sutra is saying is given in the Bhagavatam. So that has to be the connection. You saw many times, especially like when 9th, 11th cantos, then you'd see directly the verses and the points were just being made in the Bhagavatam. So that's the point. Bhagavatam is making all the points that the Vedanta Sutra is making, but it's making in the context of devotional service. So that makes the Sandarbhas actually the best thematic study. In order to grasp the significance of this work, one must consider the ambitious task to which Jiva Goswami was entrusted. Aside from his shikshastakam prayers, Lord Chaitanya never committed his teachings to writing. Instead, Sri Chaitanya relied on his stalwart followers, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, to preserve, validate, and disseminate his vani for the benefit of all humanity. Right, so you have to preserve it means it's written down. You have to validate it because other sampradayas will have different viewpoints. And then besides the sampradayas, you have all these, mental speculators in karma and jnana that are coming up. So you have to protect it against that and then be able to see that it's handed down and people can understand it and use it. Right? So that's serious, serious work. And just what were those teachings? Bhagavan Sambandha Bhakti Abhideya Hoy Prema Payojana Vede Teen Vastu Kai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the central point of all relationships. Acting in devotional service to Him is one's real occupation, and the attainment of love of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. These three subject matters are described in the Vedic literature. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 6:178. So, central point of all relationships. So, all relationships, whatever it is, the time, place, circumstances on anything, then one has to understand Krishna is the center of that. He's what makes it function. He is the ability, it means how you say, the position of them, the existence of them, the potency of them, the endeavor that they can make, you know, what they do, what they what they produce. So that means indirectly he's for everything. But the point is what you value in that, that's specifically. And then it's got to be about what is your relationship with Krishna. Right? So that's going to make the whole thing. So it's not just, oh yeah, philosophically, but in our life. No, everything it has to be seen. So all relationships. He didn't say, is the central point of relationship. All relationships. Right? So even your relationship with your hamster, you have to be able to see Krishna is the center of that. And if you're not, then it still needs some more mature thought. Acting in devotional service to him is one's real occupation. Right, one's maintaining the body and all that, so one has one's occupation. But the real occupation is going back to Godhead. Right? So that going back to Godhead, that's the real occupation. So pleasing Krishna is the actual thing. So you can't be to support the body and then the body is not engaged in the actual occupation, that's a loss. Right? So it has to be that the secondary occupation is only supporting the real occupation. The devotional service is the actual occupation. Right? Not anything else. Because the others will maintain the body and mind, social status, that's all it'll maintain. Right? And then it'll be lost. And the attainment of love, Godhead, is the ultimate goal of life. So many goals are there that you're doing on the process and the path. You know, either externally or internally. But the point is that developing love for attainment of love of Godhead, that's the actual goal, the ultimate goal of everything. So if that's always seen as the ultimate goal, then you judge all other goals. Are they moving in that direction? Because a goal means you get to a goal, you have to go through stages. Right? So if you're trying to get to Calcutta, then you're going to have goals. You're going to be, you know, first get out of the house, you know, lock everything, get into the car. Like that, you know, so like that, you know, that there should be a driver there and everything like that. You know, there's petrol, you know, so many, you know, little goals. Then you're driving. Then if you see Krishnagar, right, okay, then we know something's there. And then you keep going, then there's Ranagat, then there's like this. But if, you know, you get in the car and the first thing you see is Dabulia, there's a problem. Because it's not in line with the ultimate goal. Right, it's a goal. But not necessarily the one in line with that goal. Because otherwise the next thing you'll see is, you know, how you say, Faraka Dam or something. You know? Somebody said? Yeah. So that point that is the ultimate goal, all things must be seen there. So in Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about wherever you are, line that up. He's meaning line it up with this. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We see sometimes devotees, they know the goal. I mean, they know Sambandhadi, they Prayojana as such. But their life more looks like religion.
Yes. Because that's basically what they're practicing. So the thing is you have to make it conscious. You have to make it that's what you're doing with your life. I was just looking at that and was thinking, take off the little front part and make some really nice shoes.
Nice design.
Yeah. Very interesting shoes. Yeah. The pattern. You know, leave off that little bit going out the front. That means all the way up to that dark line. Yeah, that. Yes, because they're practicing religion now, whether, you know, how much that they're practicing it in, you know, that'll be traditional, how much is not, how much is mixed. But yes, the idea is I'm doing the right thing and that's what I should be doing. But you have to keep in mind that secondary aspect of religion has to be seen in context of the primary, that it's about pleasing Krishna. That's why we're following the religion. So then you'll see that there are those who are more intellectual and speculative, those who are more religious, those who their speculation is because they don't so much have a traditional kind of religious approach. They have more of a contemporary kind of, you know, value system like that. And so because of that, you won't take it as a religious. It is. Just like a scientist, him following his religion of pratyaksha, it is a religion. But it has such a different flavor than those aspects of religion that are more recommended and more naturally used for pleasing the Lord, for the supreme, for Sad-Dharma. In other words, Sad-Dharma is there, then Dharma that is directly supportive of Sad-Dharma, that then fits very nicely, and that'll give very much that kind of, I say, warm, fuzzy, religious mood. But as it starts to move away into lower and lower levels of consciousness, you know, especially once it leaves the theistic, then, because Krishna's not involved, or at least the Supreme's not involved, then it takes on a different flavor. And then when it comes down to the senses, it's the animal dharma, but we don't generally call it dharma, because they're humans. Right? Dog does what they do, and that's what you expect. You know, you expect that you're all sitting there and the cat walks by, you expect your dog to get up and go bark and chase it. And if it doesn't, it's like, what's wrong with you today? You know what I'm saying? But when humans are like that, then that's the problem. Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes up is as we were saying, these levels of consciousness, that the sensual, then about the senses, what's best for the senses, the engagement of the senses, then that, of course, is quite obvious that that's what it is. Then when it starts to get a little bit more sophisticated, and it's still sense gratification, then because of that social status thing, then it's somehow or another seen in it's not as gross. It's not seen as badly, because at least it's socially acceptable by that individual. You know, and it's kind of, they have some skill, they have some talent, and like this. Then if we want to work together, then we have to come up with codes so that everybody can work together and everybody can enjoy their senses. So the moralistic codes that come up from that, that's where you see all your issues and your political, religious, your these new agey, the little more subtle of that. And, the contemporary issues of the day, the social issues, and these kind of things like that, the economic, all these different things, they're all about someone does something wrong, because, and why it's wrong is because it's bad for everybody to develop sense gratification. Like if somebody has a monopoly on something, then the problem is he'll get all the money and it won't be shared. Right? Well, if it's broken up, then, there's more chance that everybody's going to get a benefit. To some extent, because of competition, they'll try harder. If it's a monopoly, they may not try at all. You know, like that. And so, these things, that's why it's seen as bad. You know, but everybody wants a monopoly on whatever they're doing. But at the same time, as we'll consider on the greater scale, it's not good. Simply because, yes, if I get it, then it's good, but if someone else has it, then it's not, so therefore we have to agree that we limit these things. Does that make sense? So in here is that God's not part of the concept at all. It's just what's good for the social. The first one is what's good for my senses. The second one is what's good for the social body of senses. You know, what we call our group. You know, up to however far you take it. Right? Then within that, then you get into, you can within this have a form. This will get a little confusing here, because you're going to have a few stages of this next point. Is that it's still pranamoy, but they'll accept that if someone worships God, it's okay. Because simply by, generally it's seen that those who have some concept of God, of a supreme, they generally tend to be more moralistic. And because of that, it'll be better for society. As long as it just sticks to them doing it, or it doesn't affect the whatever the greater morals are. Does that make sense? You know, if the greater morals are one thing, and then this small group of religious persons, then they say this is wrong, then socially it's bad. So therefore you have to break down that authority and all that. You know what I'm saying? But they don't actually care about God. They just see that it works. It's not, it's not that I would have thought of that or even cared about that, but people are doing it and it seems to work. So yeah, why not? We'll roll with it. Not that I'm going to do it, but you know what I'm saying? So that's there. So even though, so that's a, you could say it's a pseudo theist. Because they're not actually theistic at all. But they'll accommodate it. But they won't profess it and don't actually think it's important other than it's there. And it doesn't hurt because if there's no God, then at least they're behaving nicely. And if there is a God, then okay. Then, you know, they kind of have more of a connection. So it's not, so they can even be religious, you know, and still have that attitude, as long as it's like the, it'll be the kinds that God's made the world and all this, and then he's left it to us to manage it and do something with it. You know, you'll find in there. So it's they kind of have a sentiment, but it's still only a part of the greater social system. Right? So that's still pranamoy. Then when you go into manamoy, then in there they're accepting shastra. So they'll follow Varnashram and all those things like that. So we will call that theistic. The previous one, if we're just saying a general thing, we'll say theistic because they're accepting it and they'll also relate with what we're doing. So because of that being related, then they'll be open to, you know, actual real theism. Right? So either this, you know, how you say, I don't know what you call pseudo-theistic, and then this one can be quasi-theistic, you know, and then you have actual, we'll get into that next. So then in here they accept it, but in Varnashram and being pious and following the rules, then, or even if they don't follow Varnashram, but they accept, you know, the religious rules of their particular faith, then the difficulty is worship of God, and that surrender is just a, it's just an anga of their system. Their system is, the goal is not to please God for prema, the goal is to please God so they can get to the heavenly planets or get some material facility now. Just depends on how far forward they think. Right? So that's the difficulty. Does that make sense? So it's not actually theistic. It still has that hostility towards God, because God is only as much as you have to please so you get your material benefits. So basically this will include all world religions and those followers of the Veda that are not devotees. Right? The in here is that they'll have that faith in God. Right? But the difficulty is that, so whether they're simply social, it's a social consideration, or it's a world religious consideration, or it'll be Vedic and they follow Varnashram. But in all of them, worship of God is just an unga of what they do. Right? He's not the main thing. You know, when there's more trouble, he'll be more prominent. And when the things are going good, then he'll be less or not prominent. Right? Now, in this, one common point of all of them is there's not so much knowledge of the soul. Or so much focus on that. So you see, the lower it is, the least. You work on the simply the social platform, basically there's practically no knowledge. There's a concept, kind of a feeling that there's some, like a fragrance, like that. Then you get into more, and they'll talk about the soul, but if you ask them, what is the soul, they don't know. Is it the body? Is it the mind? Is it something else? They don't know. The Vedic, they'll know what the soul is, but they don't actually understand the nature of the soul as servant of God. They just think that, you know, mode of goodness, you're supposed to do things. Does that make sense? So in other words, the Varnashram one will be predominantly in goodness. Of course, there's some passion and ignorance there. The world religious position, there'll be a touch of goodness, there'll be a little bit more passion, and there'll be a touch more ignorance. Right? When you're just dealing with the social, then there'll be predominantly ignorance, but, and there's that passion, of course, but there'll be that touch of goodness that they're just a little bit more, you know, enlightened than the rest of them. Right? Then when you get into the Vijnanamoy, now that's the platform that devotees function at. So they're following the religious principles that's given in the Shastra, but they have an understanding of the soul and all that. How the material world are trying to bring themselves out there, you know, they're cultivating that detachment, giving up the material and all those things like that. But you could say they're situated on the spiritual platform. Right? Does that make sense? The one before is the religious platform, it's the spiritual platform. So in that you'll have those that also, you have the ones that are on that spiritual platform, the jnanis, but they're not interested in devotional service, just in liberation. But the process and all that, you know, they are the same. Flavor will be different. And their end result will be different. So the devotees, they practice there, their vaidhi bhakti there. You know, the sadhana bhakti and like that. Then from there, then they're doing that in connection with, so they're using as a foundation the Vedic system, the Varnashram and all that, is as the religious platform. They're operating at the platform, the spiritual position of the soul, of Vijnanamaya, but they're always trying to apply it into Anandamaya. Because Anandamaya means that it's that natural, spontaneous devotional service. So you can see is that if you don't have so much of the knowledge or so much of the other aspect, you'll see the religious flavor will be a little more prominent. Then you see those who get more, so in other words, karma. The karma yoga is more prominent, so you see a little bit more religious. Mm-hmm. Now we see there's three levels of that religion. Mm-hmm. You know, so just how much is there? So is it because they're accepting the Vedic, or is it because before they took up Krishna consciousness, they were a religious-minded person and practicing mm-hmm. person? So you'll see that aspect. Or it's just that, you know, they were into more subtle things than that before. They were more new agey or more, you know, that kind of stuff. And so they have that little bit more. It's just, you can tell, it's just a matter of what fragrance is there, you know, in that religiosity. Does that make sense? And so then you'll see it'll come up. And then if you see it's more that gyan aspect and all that, then you know that the gyan is more prominent. They're performing their sadhana. But that religious aspect will be that more. And then you see those that are nicely situated about the rules there, and that will have that mix. And then you'll see those that they're inspired in devotional service, it'll start to have that more flavor of the Anandamaya. You know? So it's just a matter of whichever platform you're at, be situated, and then slowly it'll take you through. Does that make sense? So yes.
Well, so can we say that the solid platforms is Anamaya, Manamaya, and Anandamaya?
Yes, they're the solid platforms.
And in between, that I've noticed that the devotees, they have difficulties in between, in Pranamaya and Vijnanamaya. All those topics, you know, where the jiva comes from, and the fall of the jiva and Mayavada, it's there in Vijnanamaya. And then all the social issues, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Be good,
yes.
Be nice, no, good, justice.
Yes.
It's all Pranamaya.
Yes, yes.
So although philosophically, we try to situate ourselves in you know, Manamaya and Anandamaya, but we interact in between mm-hmm. those two. Mm-hmm. So it makes it loses its taste, actually.
Well, that's the actual main point, is the rasa is in Anamaya, Manamaya, Anandamaya. Because Anamaya is a Partiva rasa. Swargiya is Manamaya, and Anandamaya is Vaikuntha. So that's the whole point. There's no taste in these two in between. That's why the devotee may be situated in functioning there. Right? He's, you know, that use of the jnana yoga is used. But he's using that for the purpose of Anandamaya.
Right,
so that's why you see if someone gets too scholarly, then there's a problem there. They'll have problem in the spiritual because there's no taste. You know, it has a certain taste because jnanis, they have a particular flavor that they appreciate. But, you know, they won't have so much interaction like that. What you see is that that Manamoy, that social, the Varnashram, that's where all the samskaras, the weddings, you know, inviting people over, taking care of guests, giving in charity, you know, doing all those nice things, you know, how you say, doing the right thing, you know, if you borrow something, you give it back, you do all these things. There's all that considering, all the good qualities that people are looking for, it has its natural form there, and the taste there. When they try to apply it in Pranamaya, there's no taste. So that's the difficulty. That's why they keep having to switch around. So whatever you say, there's no taste there. But the problem is they've grown up in a society of no taste. Because you'll only have the taste if you're an animal, then you just what you want, you get, and you're happy. Right? Or you're accepting religion. And in that, you'll see is that those who have a strong kind of religious foundation, they have community. Right? Because then you have community, because you know everybody does what you do and values what you do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just like all your friends on whichever day you accept as the Sabbath, you know, like that, you know how you say, whether it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Wednesday.
No Friday.
Yeah, that's true. No Sunday either. So.
Sunday's okay.
Ours is Wednesday, right? So then we see that you know everybody's going to be doing that, so it's a matter of they're going to go for that or what's connected with that, you know. But if you find out your friend's going out golfing and having a party, then it's kind of like, how do you be friends with them? You know, you can't be too deep. You know, so they're doing the same thing you're doing. You go to their house, it'll be the same kind of arrangements, the values, the food will be similar. You know, there's a uniqueness, of course, because they're a different family, a different taste, but it'll be similar. The quality, the standard, the mood of interaction, you know, the dress, how the men will behave, how the women will behave, how they'll interact, how the children will behave, how the parent, adults will interact with the kids. You know, what's their concept of punishment and awards and you know, where they want to go with life, how far are their kids going. You know, and what they're doing, what's their plan in life. And, you know, it'll be similar because they have a common religion. So that's why in the Vedas, if you don't have Saddharma as your religion, it's just pleasing Krishna, and therefore you have that community with the pure devotees. Therefore, then they give the human platform of religion is in Varnashram, is, you know, with the Vedic literature as it gives. Varnashram and all these aspects, you know, austerity, charity, the Vedic religions. And so using that, there's a common ground. You know, if you follow Varnashram, it'll hold them all together. Right? Because everybody has a spot within it. And if you don't, it makes it a little harder. It does. But when you accept in between, you talk about, oh, if we all are together and we have the community and all that, and we support each other, it sounds great, like it, but it's only a mental titillation. There is no taste there. Other than the speculation on the taste that you could get. That's the problem with it. That's why whatever's happening in New Age, it's always changing. Right? And the people who talk purely like that aren't so many. Does that make sense? You know, unless you're from Oregon, then like most people are like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the difficulty comes down is that these things aren't understood. They're not. Prabhupada gives them. You see, it's so many times he's talking about these five levels of consciousness. You know, about all the anamoya and all these different things. So, Taittiriya Upanishad. He's quoting Taittiriya Upanishad all the time on this, because that's where that's where it's mentioned in nicely. And then one of the volleys of Taittiriya Upanishad is just on this. Like that volley means chapter. So it, you know, it's a very important Vedic principle. You know, and he's always talking about Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And he's always explaining about Varnashram, how it's applied, and all these different things. But he's not describing Varnashram, meaning simply from Manamoy. He's explaining it how one would, from the Bhagavatam's angle, apply it. In other words, what's the Anandamoya perception and application of Varnashram? You know, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning, his Prayojana, says that's how it's used. We don't care other than that. That's why we'll talk this, and then those who are situated in Pranamaya will think we're just so Vedic and so archaic. But the funny part is those that are so Vedic, they'll think we're not. They'll think we're too liberal. So it's a funny position. You know, because of that broad-mindedness, is those who are, you know, don't have any issues, then they'll think that, okay, they'll be attracted by the liberal part. Mm-hmm. You know, and those that are traditional but not so, you know, like that, they'll like that part. So it does go to everybody, but those who are situated in Niyamagraha, they won't appreciate it. Because they don't want to move forward. They have their attachments and they don't want to adjust. So,
yeah.
Good? Yeah, so that's a very important point, is that taste is only in those three. So then, in other words, the pranamoy the taste is either going to be in the senses or in the in theistic morality. So when you talk, oh, the greater and all that, you have to actually be bringing it from the higher.
Yeah.
Though you're not actually going to use it in that way. Because you're only choosing those things from the higher that you want. Mm-hmm. And then the senses, it's like you get to you choose whatever you want, but then you have to present it as if it's sophisticated. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say the guy sits down, you know, sits nicely. He puts his very nice, nicely shaped, you know, bottle on the table. You know, they pull off, take out the cork like that. And then, you know, in a very nicely shaped glass, they pour some in, not too much. And then hold it nicely and talk and all that. You'll say they're sophisticated, right? Now, if the guy plunks down, puts down a big monster, you know, like stainless steel glass or a big even, you know, even something else, let's say, how you say, you know, a Tupperware or something like that, fills the thing right up and then just chugs it and that, you know, and then, you know, wipes, you know, all the traditional things like that. Then you'll say, this guy's gross sense gratifier and all this. The other guy will drink that much. He'll just do it over some time. Well, this guy will drink like that and then walk off. You know, so he'll do it in 30 seconds like that. Well, the other one will do it over 2 hours. You know what I'm saying? So we'll say the one is not good and the other one's good simply because of the sophistication. But as far as the senses go, it's the same. Right? It's the same sin. You know, just one's more practical. You don't need 2 hours. You know, you only need a couple of, 30 seconds. So, does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that the pranamoya, it has to talk as if it's talking. That's why when you bring out the religious that's strong, then they'll start talking like that. But in actuality, it's about the senses, but they cover it up and pull it up. So if anybody does do something that's obviously senses, they'll step forward and, you know, ringing the bell, the shame, shame, you know, that whole thing. Because it's just, that's the thing, because it's, you know, in other words, the fault is it's so gross, it's obvious. You know? And the other is you're pulling from the upper end, but you have conviction in it, then that's the fault. So it's not about religion, it's about our morality. Because it's all morality. Morality means what rules you follow. But it's just, is it theistic, it's based on God, or it's not? Does that make sense? So that's the problem, is although there's so much taste and it seems so sophisticated and all that, but the problem is that there's no taste. You know, so if you get together, means it's just like, let's say you have some religious people, they can get together and just talk about themselves and what's going on, and, you know, a concern of the other isn't like that. But if you get into this more pranamoyic thing, they can, as long as it's in line with those common kind of moralistic values that they talk about, that's the only conversation, or they have to talk about somebody else. You know, they don't really, they don't have any depth really of relationship. Right? Same when you go above, then it's got to be we're not the body and this and that, then they drop all the religious aspects and all that, and then, you know, where's the taste there? Right? So in other words, sad-dharma means you're doing your duties, and at the same time, because Krishna performs human pastimes, it has that Vedic flavor to it. Does that make sense? So the Vedic flavor actually fits very nicely with Braj, but we only use how much supports Braj. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, the Pancharatra, that very nicely supports Vaikuntha. You know, but because it's Vedic, we use it. It's a standard because it's already been cut down. And then from that, we'll put the Braj flavor. But we don't have any problem with the Vedic. Does that make sense? Well, let's say the Smartas, they're good with Vedic. For them, the Pancharatra and the Bhagavat, that's a problem. But then it takes on a different flavor again. So that's why when we use the Pancharatra, we use all three systems, the Pancharatra and the Vedic, it still has the fragrance of Bhagavad. that make sense? So then you'll see is that when you're dealing with the acharyas, there'll be more of a common flavor there. So we've got Ramanuja and this and that, their pastimes would be more close to us. Because they're only reducing it down to that. But for their followers, they have to have more involved. And so that's where you'll see the difference. Because that's all they're seeing. Like for us, we don't have so much, so it'll be closer. Does that make sense? Is that good? Yeah. Srinath Chakravartipad has expanded on these three tattvas of Lord Chaitanya in this important verse. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajesha Tanayas Tad Dhamma Vrindavanam Ramya Kachit Upasana Vrajavadhu Varagena Ya Kalpita Shastram Bhagavatam Pramanam amalam prema pumarto mahan itam gaura mahaprabhur matam atas tatradaro na paraha. The Supreme Lord to be worshipped is the son of the king of Raja. His personal abode is Vrindavan. The most favorable mode of serving him is that which was practiced by the young maidens of Braja. The scripture Bhagavatam is the spotless source of reliable knowledge. And pure love of God is the supreme goal of life. Such are the opinions of Gaura Mahaprabhu, and we therefore respect them implicitly. Chaitanya Mata Manjusha 111. Ever heard of that one?
Yeah.
You have? Well, I haven't.
It's a famous verse. It's actually misunderstood, because that Ramya Kachidu Pasana means following in the footsteps of damsels of Braj, means only Madhurja. People interpret it as if it should be Madhurja.
Yeah, but it just means that full surrender.
Yeah. That point is like big discussion.
I say, yes. I told you the Bengali occupation of taking rice that's left in the husk, and then you cook it in hot sand, and it pops like popcorn. And so, lots of noise, lots of work, lots of volume. But, yeah. Yes. Each of the six Goswamis contribute to the mission of spreading Sri Chaitanya's teachings. Dozens upon dozens of commentaries, treatises, dramas, and worship manuals were written among them, each dealing with a specific topic. Jiva Goswami's role is unique. However, as he set out to consolidate and systematize the entire canon of Gaudiya Vaishnavism theology on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, an effort culminating in the Sandarbhas. Footnote 2. To explain the term Sandarbha, in his commentary on this text, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan quotes a well-known verse of unknown origin. Gudartasya prakashas cha sharok tih tis shreshtata tata nanarta vattatam vatvam no nanarta vatvam vedyatvam sandarbha Katyate Budhaihi. Quote, a literary work that explains the confidential aspects of a subject, incorporates its essence, explains the superiority of the subject, gives its various meanings, and is worth learning, is called a Sandarbha by learned scholars. And is worth learning, right? That's it. Okay, so that's the meaning of a Sandarbha. Right? This challenge was compounded due to the fact that, with the ebb and flow of time, the clear message of Srimad Bhagavatam was distorted by unscrupulous teachers. Furthermore, while all the standard schools of Vaishnavism implicitly trusted Srimad Bhagavatam, few appreciated its preeminent position. They all accepted it as a bona fide work. But whether it's the prominent work is not. Like we said, the Sris, for them, it's Vishnu Purana, and of Vishnu Purana, especially Vishnu Dharmotra. Mm-hmm. Vishnu Dharmotra is the last section of the Vishnu Purana. And I'm not sure, but I think it's actually bigger than what is generally accepted as Vishnu Purana. Because before it was all of it, because it's such a major work in itself, within the Purana, it's given its own kind of name. Just like in the Taittiriya Upanishad, it has four volumes, you know, four sections. And so the first three, when you say Taittiriya Upanishad, it means the first three. And then if you say Narayanavali, that means the fourth. So it's so prominent that it's known as part of the one, but it's given its own kind of position. So in the same way, the Vishnu Puran includes Vishnu Dharmotra, but Vishnu Dharmotra is given its own position because of its prominence. So Ramanujacharya put a lot of emphasis on this. Does that make sense? So, we see is that Bhagavatam's not the main focus of the Sampradayas. They don't see it's what it fully will give. Even if it is, you know, their work, but the fineness that it's getting out to, As theological next of kin, the four Vaishnava Sampradayas teachings are based on the Bhagavatam to some extent. Yes, it was up to the saintly reformer Jiva Goswami to revive its full glory and import. Because we have to see as Vyasadeva, who's compiled all the Vedic literature, that means the four Sampradayas are going to be based on those Vedic literatures. But having compiled all that, it's only after, with the instructions from Narad Muni, that then he sits in meditation, and then he has that realization of the preeminence of the Bhagavatam. Then he compiles the Bhagavatam. So we have to understand it is in a unique position. In the discharge of this tax, Jiva Goswami coined the term Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, or inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference, to describe Sri Chaitanya's metaphysical doctrine. Distinct from the other personalist schools, it was based squarely upon the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. And you see the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva is just what the Bhagavatam is always talking about. And Prabhupada always mentioned, this is actually what the Vedic literature is, the core essence of it. And from that you get all the four schools will come out of that. You know, so they're based on that, and they're solid in themselves, but the fineness of it is only there in the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Okay. It was squarely based on the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. It is in the Sandarbhas in which we find Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva elucidated in its original and most complete form. Jiva Goswami arrived at the conception of Achintya Bheda Bheda by first analyzing the way in which one should understand Srimad Bhagavatam. In this, he adopted a novel approach. What could be more direct, simple, yet perfect means of understanding the Bhagavatam's message than examining the minds of its principal speaker and author, Sukadeva Goswami and Vyasadeva, respectively? He himself describes his approach to the gargantuan task ahead of him in the first installment, the Tattva Sandarbha. Vaktu Shri Shuktasya Shri Veda Vyasaya Cha Samana Hridayam Tasmad Vaktur Hridayanurupam Eva Sarvatra Tatparyam Parya Lochaniyam Man Yata. The speaker of the Bhagavatam, Sri Sukha, shared the same attitude as Sri Veda Vyas. Therefore, in all cases, we should analyze the purport of the Bhagavatam strictly in accordance with the attitude of its speaker, not otherwise. In other words, it's written by Vyasa, so you have to see it through that vision. You can't use another vision. We must conclude that any analysis that disagrees with Sukadeva's ideas will only create a perverted understanding. Atakramena Vistaratas tataiva tatparyam nir netum sambandha vidheya prayojaneshu shadbhi sandharabher nir nesh shamaneshu pratamam. To definitely establish the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam as outlined above, The six Sandarbhas set forth in detail the topics one after another of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Tattva Sandarbha 49 through 50. This approach is the most unique and natural way to present the quintessence of Srimad Bhagavatam, right? So that's why from the beginning we've seen it's always been about Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. That's the central theme. All structures go back to that. Does that make sense? And it has some natural expansions. You know, for many years we're using the Chaturvyuha, like that. Then there's the five levels of consciousness or the five levels of attaining knowledge. You know, these are all natural forms, the masculine and feminine. These are all natural forms of this original form. So, yeah. Okay, this approach is the most unique and natural way to present the quintessence of Srimad Bhagavatam, according to the faith and experience of its writer and its prime speaker, revealed as they are within the text. In spite of its obvious appeal, no other scholar or acharya had ever thought to examine the contents of Srimad Bhagavatam from that angle. And since Lord Chaitanya has brought this out and then instructing the Goswamis, then they've documented it in this way. While no shortage of essays have been written on Srimad Bhagavatam, no one has analyzed the text as finely as Sri Jiva has. Footnote 3. Sri Jiva is also famous for his Krama Sandarbha, a verse-by-verse commentary on the Bhagavatam, and the Laghu Vaishnav Toshani, a commentary on the 10th canto. This marks Jiva Goswami as the first scholar in our line to explain the Bhagavatam in such detail. Because he's given a commentary on the whole Bhagavatam, and then a very fine one on just the 10th canto. Well, other acharyas have written many on the 10th canto, I think some on 10, 11, and 12. You know, different like this, or some other parts like this. But he's the only one that I know of has done the whole thing, and then a second commentary that's just on the 10th canto. So it's very, very unique, like that. So that's it's Krama Sandarbha. So then you know you have there the symbols that you know you have the six Sandarbhas, but then this is also a Sandarbha. Krama means, I think, step by step. Okay. You know, so like Prabhupada, he chose all the word for word and everything like that. So it's following that style. His approach is unique, natural, and undefeatable. Jiva Goswami has got six Sandarbhas. So these Sandarbhas are so philosophically discussed that throughout the whole world there is not a single philosopher who can defy these Jiva Goswami's six Sandarbhas. Srila Prabhupada, Lecture Srimad Bhagavatam 111, London, August 6, 1971. That's the point, is that this is the standard. He means this is the gold standard of philosophy. This is how everything should be seen in this context. The Sandarbhas establish the full theistic views of the Bhagavatam in defiance of all other systems, whether Vedic or non-Vedic. Throughout the sixfold treatise, Jiva Goswami manifests his superhuman command over the vast body of Vedic literature. From the text of the Shruti, Upanishads, Puranas, Itihasas, Tantras, and Agamas, there seems not a page unturned by the Goswami. His mastery of their contents makes it appear almost as though he wrote them himself. Studying such Sandarbhas, one is held spellbound by his literary opulence alone, to say nothing of the realization he so kindly shares within. Right? Because his grammar is perfect, as we said. You know, he wrote the Gopal Champu just to give an example to all students how they can see all the grammar in one place. They don't have to go here and there, and it's all in one place. Right? So you have that aspect, then you have the... I even forgot what we're talking about. Yeah, so it has that grammatical thing. It has the aspect of nyayas. Nyaya is perfect. He went to Varanasi, studied for 20 years. So you have the best scholar in the world, and he studies Nyaya for 20 years. That means no one can defeat him in the logic that he presents. Right? And then, as pointed out, then he has just his, you know, wonderful deep realizations being a direct disciple of Lord Chaitanya and a servant of Rupa and Sanatana, you know, under their direction. And so then he's going to have, what he will be giving is so unique and special. That's why you see is that all the acharyas then, they follow in that presentation, that line. And you see Prabhupada always talking about it, Bhaktivinoda Thakura always talking about it. You know, that is just, you know, yes. They're always talking about him, and he's talking about Rupa Goswami. Right? You know, so that's the... The Sandarbhas provide a philosophical foundation for the ecstasy and love that Sri Chaitanya embodied and that the author experienced so deeply. It is no exaggeration to assert that through this gift, Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has performed the greatest welfare to humanity. Sri Jiva further blessed us with an auto commentary on the first four Sandarbhas, the Sarvan Samvadini. Although brief compared to the Sandarbhas, the form and function of the Sarva Samvadini resembles that of the complex footnotes used in modern-day scholarship. It provides supplementary, sometimes highly technical, information to the Sandarbhas. Right, so the first four, that'll be Sambandha. Right, so that'll be where your main technical points are there. Because otherwise, then the others are going to be, you could say, since it's commenting on Bhagavatam and showing that, the natural commentary on the Abhideya aspect of the Bhagavatam is going to be Nectar of Devotion. Right. So, makes sense? Rupa Goswami, because he's the Acharya there. Right.
So, One devotee said that he specifically wrote this to defeat all the other, especially the Mayavads, and then even to reconcile to prove how Achintya Bheda Veda is highest. All the other Vaishnava Sampradaya also.
Okay, very good. Very good. Yeah, so it's this Sambandha based.
Yes.
It is stated that, without studying the Satsandarbhas, one must struggle to understand the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and still he may not succeed. However, one who has studied the Satsandarbhas will have no misgivings about the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Satsandarbhas thus make for required reading for any serious student of the Indian philosophical thought, not to speak of those descending in the line of Jiva Goswami. Right? So we see is that even those outside of the Gaudiyas, they themselves find its special value to read, especially the Tattva Sandarbha. Like that. I've heard of, I think of Sri Vaishnava, someone was talking about a Mayavadi, a very, nicely established Mayavadi, became a devotee from reading Tattva Sandarbha. Like that. It's just so convincing. It's just so exact. As publishers of this study guide, is our aim to help navigate you through this voluminous work as a means of assisting in your sincere attempt to attain the goal of all transcendental knowledge, Krishna Prema. In Anucheda 180 of Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami begs forgiveness from Sri Krishna for any mistake he may have made in revealing his deity's confidential leelas. Before presenting this work to you, the reader, we invoke his words of supplication, replacing Sri Krishna's name with that of our Acharya. Quote, may the all-compassionate Sri Jiva Goswami forgive us for even the smallest wrong we may have committed. Unquote. Finally, we would like to express our sincere gratitude to His Holiness Bhanuswami Maharaj, whose lucid translations, keen insights, and realized commentary constitute the bulk of this work, right? Because he's translated it. That's the thing, because we because of this approach, because we're using the traditional based on Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, we found that his translations were the best. But we see Gopi Puranadana, though, you could say, literarily, his will always be much more poetic and nice like that. But it appears that he was more bringing it forward for the appreciation of contemporary scholars. So we didn't find it as, ideal for the presentation that, we've been keeping all the way through based on the structures given by the Acharyas. So that's why we've chosen his one. Apart from the translation of Sundarbas, Maharaj has also blessed us with the translation of Sri Balavadeva Vidyabhushan's commentary on Tattva Sundarbha. So the current work of the study guide consists of the translation of Srila Jiva Goswami's Sundarbas along with his own commentary, Sarva Sambhadani, on the first four Sundarbas and Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary on Tattva Sundarbas. So that's what we're going to be taking from. And then is there any backup from verses from the Bhagavatam and then Acharya's commentaries on those verses?
Yes.
You know, so it's like what we're doing in Bhagavatam. You're going through and then it'll have a verse and then the Acharyas themselves in their own commentaries on those verses and made comments. So anything that is, you know, will add to our appreciation understanding, and that has been included. So that same style. But here we see it so nicely that Jiva Goswami and Baladeva Vidyabhushan have given these commentaries and Bhanu Maharaj has been so kind to translate them. So basically, we couldn't have started earlier than this, really, anyway. Because he only, I think, this last year just finished the work. So even though, we wanted to start a few years earlier, Krishna had his plans.
All the six?
Yes. That's why we shifted gears to like that. It means we're staying within the context of Nyaya Prashtan. We're just switching to the Sundarbas. Sorry? They're all written in Sanskrit. Okay.
So, like, earlier version of Tattva Sundarbha, Gopiparandan Prabhu was his commentary.
Yes.
Here is like a literal translation which Maharaj made. So,
the
flavor will change.
Yeah, the flavor will be changed. Because Gopi's commentary, because what he does is, because in there there'll be so much grammatical explanations, because grammar is a logic, and so it's one of the accepted forms of, you want to establish something logically, you explain it according to the grammar. So because in English and grammar, those are not synonyms, and so then he would just pick the relevant points that are be making and then present it in the context where we can appreciate it. And we see that when he does like a Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, then it becomes very, very nice. You know, just that, because it's a very sweet work and the flow of it, and you appreciate it. And remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he had a translation, I think, by other devotees of the... the one for Chaitanya Chandra Doinakata. And so then in that, Gopi had done the first three acts. And he preferred that just because of the poetics of it was so nice. So when it came to poetics, Gopi's the best. But because he understood that very few appreciate Sanskrit grammar, right? He ran a school and tried to do his best, and I think he had a handful of students, literally. So he tried to present so that without knowing grammar, one could appreciate what the Acharyas were saying. Right? So that works very nice in that kind of context. But since we're always working on these frameworks given by the Acharyas in the philosophy, then we don't have a problem with the grammatical explanations and those kind of aspects. So we prefer to use those kind of commentaries in that. So even though his will be very nice and very pleasant and very, how you say, accessible, then we're using the others so that we actually get the fine technical points and we can actually tell what's the uniqueness that's there.
Mm-hmm. Right? Wherever relevant, we included his one also.
Okay, then whatever his is, okay, then it's been included, so you get, yes.
So the doubt is that without knowing Sanskrit, how are we going to understand that kind of logic and that kind of presentation?
Because it's presented very nicely. It's just generally thought that it won't be appreciated. But my point is we've been using that all along. So you're used to it. So it won't be a problem. What we're saying is that for many, it means, I remember when we were, you know, we would have sent 70, 84. Been always presenting the courses of the school based on Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana and this verse of Lord Chaitanya. But I would say probably into the knots, you know, for 20 years, there was always the doubt on why you're using that structure. That's just, that's just a verse, it's just a thing, why you're taking that this is the central point. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then that's the point, is that since that's all we do is see it in these contexts. Therefore then it won't be a difficulty looking at it from these angles. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that.
Now it is consistent.
Yeah, it's consistent. That's the nice thing about it. Because it's consistent, maybe technical, but because you hear it over and over, it's just like today's discussion on these going up through the levels of consciousness and the difference between the types of morality. That's always been a confusion before. But today it's not, and you saw that there's three different levels of just how we would define the morality. Right? And so they're all overlapping, so like that. But it wasn't. So that's because it's consistent. We're always talking on that. The acharyas are always speaking in that way. So then give it a few years, and now it makes sense. You know? Like that. So that's the whole point, is we're working on it. Yes, it will take years. Like that. No. I'm just saying the whole thing. It's that the first year is, you know, it takes care of itself nicely. But then from that, then it starts getting, bringing in these technical angles and all that. Though it's already presented in the first year. Mm-hmm. Right? Then the next 2 years, that course, then that's going to bring in the, you know, the technical aspects and how we look at it and all that. And it's just, that's all it is. It's just frameworks of that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Then we start with the, you know, third through the fifth. No, not third, fourth through the sixth. Then you see is that now it's Bhagavatam, and then these technical aspects like that, and then the last. So it just keeps going.
So Sundarbha's 3 years study, is that right?
That was the original concept was two, but then we'll see how long it takes.
Okay.
It just depends. See, the thing is that even though it's more advanced and more technical, because we know more, then it goes more quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like the last six chapters of Gita are much more technical than the first six, but the first six chapters took two-thirds of the course. You know, and then the last 12 chapters went, in that third. So that's the whole point, is that it's there, and the farther up it is, then the quicker it goes. So we'll see.
Because we are doing Chaitanya Charitamrita and Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Bhaktira Samadhi Sindhu, then 5th and 6th, the Bhakti and Preeti Sandarbhas will be easy to work with.
Yeah, and then the end ones, because as it gets to more like pastimes and those things and that, unless it's really technical points in the Rasa, generally we appreciate that more. Like the second, middle six chapters of Gita aren't a difficulty at all for the devotees. They may not appreciate the technical aspects of the universal form in Brahman and Paramatma, but relating all that to Krishna goes very easy. Because Prabhupada's so kind, is that the Prayojana aspect he's made so prominent that we take it as just, that's basic philosophy. Mm-hmm. And then if we want to get technical, we go down into Sambandha stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scholars and all that, they go down there. So it's just natural, as we go, it'll go quicker. You know, Chaitanya Charitamrita has all the technical points, but the thing is now it's in the context of the Lord's pastimes and the Prema Bhakti and all that. So then you see it on that level. So you're seeing it on the Gita level, you're seeing the Bhagavatam level, now you're seeing Chaitanya Charitamrita level. So. Okay, biographical sketch of Srila Jiva Goswami. Oh, did we finish that? Yes, we did. Biographical sketch. Family lineage. Srila Jiva Goswami was the youngest among the celebrated six Goswamis of Vrindavan. While his exact dates are debated, the Gaudiya Vaishnav Abhidhan states that Jiva Goswami lived between 1433 to 1518 of the Shaka era, so 1511 to 1596 CE. CE means?
500
years.
Only.
Before current. Okay. So you're not doing AD as Anno Domini. I see. Okay, so All this time I thought it was the scholars behind this change in it. So CE and BCE. There was other personages in the background. So CE means current era. Really? Oh, and BCE means before current era. Just somehow or another, a certain particular personage happened to usher in the current era, but that was just happened to be consequence. It could have been anybody, right? You know. Like
that. Before Christ and after Christ.
That's the old system. But that's a. Because it's before Christ was B.C., but after Christ wasn't A.C., it was A.D.
A.C. is the problem.
After death.
Means, huh?
After death.
Oh, not after that. That's Anno Domini. Yeah, so it just means that. So then, that's why I never was always confirmed, because I got confused, because it was two different things. So now it's CE's current era and BCE's before current era. Okay, so this is generally accepted how it's used in these days?
Yes.
Huh? AD is also, in India, AD. Still AD is used.
Yeah, I'm sure the Catholics still use AD.
Yes.
Okay, so in CE, the general common usage now.
This whole thing I just what is the Jagannath Kirtan.
Okay. So C E is current era or common era or current.
I'm not sure. But modern people
don't it could be Christ's era. Before Christ's era. I guess that way everybody, it depends how you want to use it. It could be.
But now, you know, before the current era would be 90-something. Yeah, so nobody uses Christ anymore.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's too long.
Okay. Okay. From Bhakti Ratnakar, we are able to trace Jiva Goswami's lineage back 7 generations. In the 12th century, Shakabda. So this was in the... Okay. A Vaishnav named Sarvagya appeared in a prosperous Saraswat Brahmin family in Karnataka, a clan which belonged to the Bharadvaj Gotra. So the Bharadvaj Gotra of the Saraswat Brahmins is considered the top. Means amongst Brahmins, you know, if they ask, okay, this and that, and, you know, if they like to have fun, they ask Gotra, and if you say Bharadvaj, that's it. They all step back and, you know, This indicates he was either in the family or the succession of Bharadvaj Muni. After a dispute with his brother Harihara, Sarvagyan's son Rupeshwara was divested of his land and migrated from the south to the east. Rupeshwara's son Padmanabha settled on the bank of the Ganga in Naihati, West Bengal. Okay, that's on the way to Calcutta. It's just a little bit before. Padmanabha had a grandson named Kumaradeva, or Sri Kumara, who relocated to the village of Fatehabad, an area bordering Bokula Chandradweep, today known as the Jessore district of Bangladesh. They're the ones that speak with Z's. You know, like the you know, you close your nose and speak with a Z. That's that area. Of Kumaradeva's many sons, the 3 youngest took to the path of Vaishnavism. Amar, later Sanatana, Santosha, later Rupa, and Vallabha, later Anupam. Okay. All 3 were from childhood attracted to the Lord. Amar and Santosha were especially attracted to Krishna, Vallabha to Ramachandra. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Kaprema.